You got to get it done.
This is Gateway City Sports.
The rumors are true.
This is Talking Sports on the Bleachers
with Don Glenn.
A confident young man, a superb athlete.
A look at the sports issues of the day. Grab a seat, pop a cold one, and let's talk some sports.
Gee, that sounds kind of interesting.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
Romo on the shotgun here at the snap. Romo looking, dumps it up right side. Intercepted! Intercepted at the goal line by Woodson! And there is your dagger!
Buhl with a widespread stand, arms out over the plate. Pickford from the stretch. The 1-1 pitch. A swing, and there it goes! Left field! Way back! On September 23rd, 2022.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
Holy cow!
Hey, Dad? You want to have a catch?
I'd like that.
Hey there, sports fans. Glad to have you back. We have a great show for you today. We will cover a little playoff baseball, and we will talk about an NCAA football team that is, in my opinion, flying under the radar. We'll take a look at Missouri, the SEC, Illinois, the Big Ten, and we have a very special guest lined up, Mr. John Denton from MLB.com, beat writer for the St. Louis Cardinals, St. Louis Cardinals beat writer for MLB.com. It's a full show, so grab your seat. Get out your goozy. Let's talk some sports. All right, before we get into the meat of the program, so to speak, I want to say Talking Sports on the Bleachers is a proud member of Gateway City Sports. At Gateway City Sports, you'll find sports content on just about anything in and around the St. Louis Bi-State area. You will find blogs and articles from a number of contributors and other podcasts, such as The Team of Rivals with Ron Nuttall, Pete Geddes, and sometimes Elliot. The Derek King Sports Show with the Derek King, and the brand new one, That's a Winner podcast with Josh Brown and Ryan Jenkins. Now, if there's a sport you follow and we don't cover it, let us know about it. We'll see what we can do to get it taken care of for you. So check us out at GatewayCitySports.com or on Facebook at Gateway City Sports. I'm trying a new format here, and I hope you guys like it. I'm going to do like a four-segment show. I will focus on four topics that I hope are of interest to you guys in the audience. If not, please let me know. If you like it, please let me know. You know, the old line I heard Jerry Reed, I think, do. He goes, if you like what we do, I want you to applaud, clap, throw babies up in the air. If you don't like what we do, I want you to applaud, clap, throw babies up in the air. But no, if you do like what you hear, please let me know. And if you don't like what I hear, if you got something you want to hear different, I want to know that as well. I want to try and bring you the best programming possible. So how this is going to work, I'm going to have a leading off segment will be kind of a hot topic of the day. Under further review will be a segment of a story I think is flying under the radar. College Notebook, this will be about the NCAA with focus on the SEC, Big Ten, Missouri, and Illinois. And Under the Arch will be a focus on St. Louis sports like the Cardinals, Blues, Mizzou, SLU, soccer. I mean, I'll try and find something. The Battle Hawks, you know, we'll focus there. So let's get this ball rolling. So leading off, well, the World Series begins Friday, pitting the Philadelphia Phillies against the Houston Astros. Now, for the Astros, it's the fifth time that they have appeared in a Fall Classic, and they've got one World Series win. That was in 2017. For the Phillies, it's the eighth time they've appeared in a World Series, and they're looking for their third ring. They won in 2008 and 1980. Now, the Phillies were the last wild card in the National League with a record of 87-75, while the Astros came in with the second best record in baseball, best record in American League, at 106-56. The Phillies swept the Cardinals in two straight games in St. Louis to win the wild card round. They took on the Atlanta Braves. They won that series 3-1. Facing San Diego, they were down 2-1, and then promptly won the next three straight. Bryce Harper's been kind of the big reason for the success. He took an 0-4 or 0-3 in the first game against St. Louis, and since then he has hit in the at least one hit in the last nine games, and six of those games have been multiple hit games. He's got a 410, 439, 872 slash with four home runs and nine RBIs. Now, the Astros, of course, they got a first-round bye, being second best record in American League. They had three hard-fought games against Seattle, including squeaking out a 1-0 victory in 18 innings in Game 2. Then they dispatched the Yankees in four games straight, outscoring the Yanks 18-9. Now get to 18-9. Houston used a three-pronged attack with Yuli Gurriel, Alex Bregman, and Jeremy Pena, who went a combined 31-for-93. That's a 333 average. In seven games, they had seven home runs and 15 RBIs between them. Pitching was also very strong for Houston, with Framber Valdez and Lance McCullers combining for 23 2/3 innings in four games, allowing only five earned runs. Now, as far as handicapping this one, I really don't have a clue. I would like to think Houston would have the edge, being the way they're playing, and they've got, that three-pronged, three-headed monster, so to speak. But, and they've got the first two couple games at home. They've got a home field advantage in the series. But Philly's already shown they can play on the road. Being on the road doesn't bother them. So this could be, this is a hard one to handicap. I think if I had to be pressed for who I think is going to win, I think it will be the Astros. I think they will prevail. I think their pitching is better. But, you never know. Nobody really thought the Phillies would get this far either. So, like I said, Game 1 is set for Friday with Game 2 on Saturday, a day off before they go to Houston for Games 3, 4, and... Or no, excuse me, before they go to Philly for Games 3, 4, and possibly 5. If needed, Games 6 and 7 will be back in Houston on November 4th and 5th. Okay, under further review. As we get closer to the NCAA football playoffs, you're seeing a lot of names that always kind of lately have shown up in the talk for the playoffs. Ohio State, Georgia, Clemson, Tennessee's making their run, Alabama's being talked about. And then you've got those are all the unbeaten teams. Then you also have an unbeaten Michigan, and then one loss. Alabama has one loss. Ole Miss, Oregon, they also have only one loss. But there's one team out there that's made a nice progression, and they firmly but very quietly kind of put themselves in a place where it's not out of the question they could be
in this conversation before it's all said and done, and that's the Texas Christian University Horned Frogs. Number 7, TCU, is a perfect 7-0 on the season, and they've beaten 4 straight ranked opponents. Number 18, Oklahoma, 55-24. Number 19, Kansas, 38-31. Number 8, Oklahoma State, 43-40. Now, that one did take 2 overtimes. And just last week, they beat number 17, Kansas, 38-28. Now, they had to kind of come back at that one, and that's kind of been a knock on them, is they're kind of letting some teams get away from them, and then they have to come back and win the game. But the fact is, they are still winning ball games. They're coming out at the end of the game winning. Now, they've got 5 games left, 3 on the road, 2 at home. They go on the road this weekend at West Virginia. Then they're home November 5th against Texas Tech. Then back-to-back away games at Texas on the 12th and at Baylor on the 19th, and then they end up at home versus Iowa State November 26th. Now, Texas, I think, is going to be the biggest threat to their perfect record. Now, in terms of who's behind TCU chasing them down, you've got Oklahoma State and at 6-1, and they're really the only threat, but TCU has already beaten Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State is, they still got to take on Kansas State. Like I said, Texas could probably be the one that has the biggest chance of upsetting. Baylor might, but I think it's more so often Texas than Baylor. And really, unless TCU loses 2 games, they are going to be the Big 12 champs, because they own the tiebreaker over Oklahoma State and over Kansas State. So there's just no way, I think, at this point that TCU does not come out as Big 12 champion. That's just, I think, one of those things that's going to be destined to happen. Excuse me again. Now, a couple things that are also flying under the radar, really, I think, in the TCU camp, is that the play of quarterback Max Duggan. He's got almost 1,900 yards with 19 touchdowns and only 1 interception. He's also enabled as 274 rushing yards with 4 touchdowns. They've also got a good running game besides him with Kendre Miller, who's got 731 yards and 10 touchdowns of his own. Amari DiMarco, or DiMicardo, excuse me, has 289 yards. He's carrying at 6.6 yards a carry at 4 touchdowns. Duggan has thrown touchdown passes to 8 different receivers, so he's not locked into just one guy, although the big man is Quentin Johnston, with 572 yards and 3 touchdowns, but he's got Darius Davis, who's got 22 catches and 4 touchdowns. Tight end Jared Wiley, excuse me, 12 receptions and 4 touchdowns. When they get into the red zone, TCU is a beast. 32 times in red zone, 28 scores. They've got a pretty good linebacking core in juniors Johnny Hodges and Jamoy Hodge. And also senior D Winters, who have combined for 109 total tackles, 14.5 sacks, or tackles per loss, and 8.5 sacks. They've got a pretty decent pass defense with 8 picks, 32 passes broken up, and 21 quarterback hurries. So I think they've got a good chance of staying perfect. And if they do, you look at what's going to happen in the other conferences. You've got, and in the top 25, you've got Georgia and Tennessee still have to play each other. Ohio and Michigan have to play each other. You've got Ole Miss and Alabama. Now, granted, both those have 1 loss, but they all figure into the mix eventually. So it's going to be very hard to ignore a no-loss TCU when it comes time. Hey, let's talk some cars for a minute. No, I'm not talking race cars or NASCAR or anything like that. But, you know, buying a car can be stressful, especially, say, if your son's or daughter's first car. You know, but at Fifth Street Motors at 2044 Rose Lane in Pacific, Missouri, they don't think it needs to be stressful at all. See, at Fifth Street Motors, they'll help you find the right vehicle, no matter what the brand. At Fifth Street Motors, they believe in giving you the best price on a pre-owned vehicle that fits your budget. So give Brandon or Don a call today at 573-259-1306. Tell them Don Glenn from Talking Sports on the Bleacher sent you. Okay, let's take a look at the college notebook, shall we? Well, Missouri picked up its first conference win of the season. They had a halftime lead, built a halftime lead on two Luther Burden touchdowns, one through the air and one on the ground. He caught a 35-yard pass from Brady Cook in the first quarter, and in the second quarter, in his only rushing attempt of the game, went 10 yards for the score. The Tigers would add a field goal and make it 17-0. Now, Vanderbilt didn't score until the third quarter, and when they did, it was the defense. They caused a fumble, and a free forced a fumble by Tiger quarterback Brady Cook. C.J. Taylor picked it up and scampered into the end zone for Vandy's first touchdown. They would add another touchdown later, but they missed an opportunity on a kickoff. Where the ball fell in front of the returners, and Vandy picked it up and would eventually try a field goal and miss. They had another chance late in the game after they scored their second touchdown on an 80-yard touchdown pass from Mike Wright to Gamrion Carter, but Missouri was able to hold them off for the win. Also in the SEC, top 25 matchup, or a top 25 upset, I should say, in the SEC, as an unranked LSU took down number 7 Ole Miss, 45-20, and that was in Baton Rouge. Jaden Daniels rushed for 121 yards, 3 scores, and was 21 of 28 for 248 yards and 2 more touchdowns passing. Josh Williams would add another 76 yards on the ground and a touchdown. Ole Miss had a 20-7 halftime lead, but LSU would score the next 28 points with 21 in the final quarter to run away from the Rebels. The loss drops Ole Miss from the ranks of the unbeaten, and for the Rebels, Quishon Judkins rushed 111 yards for 2 touchdowns. So that was a big upset there. A minor upset, if you will, in the top 25 was number 10 Oregon beating number 9 UCLA, putting up 31 points in the first half and then holding on for a 45-30 win in Eugene. So going back to the SEC, Mizzou had their win. Tennessee beat up on Tennessee Martin. Alabama bounced back from the loss to Tennessee last week with a 30-6 win over Mississippi State. The Tennessee Martin game was 65-24 Tennessee. That was not even a contest. The SEC is going to have a big impact on the playoff series, college playoff series, in that Georgia and Tennessee, both undefeated, are going to be playing each other. And then you've got the one-loss Alabama, one-loss Ole Miss. They're going to figure into it. So you look at what's going on with the schedules, and I have to wonder, and I'm looking at it, why Georgia is number one. Because Tennessee, before the UT Martin game, beat number 20 Florida, number 25 LSU, and number 3 Alabama in that order consecutive weeks. So they've beaten 3 straight ranked teams. Georgia has only beaten one, has only played one ranked team. So, people are trying to figure out if Tennessee is the real deal. I think they are. And I think they're going to give Georgia the game of their life, to tell you the honest truth. And that game could be for all the marbles in the SEC East. As, they're the only two undefeated teams left. As I say, Alabama, Tennessee already owns the tiebreaker for Alabama. And if Ole Miss could come up and roll the tide, if you will, it could really throw things into a big tizzy. And then, of course, you have to figure out what else is going to happen with teams like Clemson. And I know that the why I mentioned earlier, TCU, I may have to say so. And then you've got the Big Ten teams of Michigan and Ohio State. So, but the SEC's got a lot, will have a lot to say. I think right now, if you had to look at it, they've got two teams in. Tennessee, Georgia. I think Ohio State then comes in, and I really think probably Clemson over Michigan if you wanted to push it. One of those two, either Ohio State or Michigan, is going to have one loss. So do you bring in one loss teams? And one of those, Georgia or Tennessee, is going to have one loss. So do you covet the one-loss teams that are high in the rankings, or do you go for the unbeatens that have put it together all year, like a TCU? So that's going to be very interesting, and could see what happens, you know. Now, over in the Big Ten, Wisconsin rose from the ashes, dominated Purdue in the 35-24, and that win, along with Ohio State beating Iowa, and that wasn't even a game. That was a Ohio State scrimmage, 54-10. And then Penn State recovering from getting beat by Michigan last week. They rolled over Minnesota, 45-17. Those three games, basically, with Illinois not playing last week, put Illinois as in the driver's seat in the Big Ten West. Now, they do have still have to play Purdue. And Purdue is right behind them. And if Purdue were to win that game, and they come down to it, and if Purdue wins that game and they're tied, Purdue would own the tiebreaker. Illinois owns the tiebreaker for almost everybody else, although there's no chance of anybody really outside of Nebraska that I think we're going to be able to challenge Illinois at this point. And guess who plays this week? Illinois, Nebraska. So if Nebraska wins, that makes Nebraska 3-2, puts Illinois at 3-2. Purdue would already be 3-2. So that can make it a three-way game, or three-way race. I don't think it's going to be. I think Illinois will beat Nebraska. I think they'll make it a two-team race. And then Purdue and Illinois hook up on the 12th of November in Champaign. Now, Purdue, before that game, they have to play they play Iowa at home, excuse me, and then Illinois has to play not only the game against Nebraska this week, but then they've got Michigan State next week before they face Purdue. So, I mean, it's possible Illinois could have a second loss before going in, but I don't think so. I think that game's going to be for the Big West title, the Big Ten West title. So we'll see how that goes and how that ends up playing. Because here's the thing: if Illinois gets into the Big Ten or wins the Big Ten West, and let's say they win the Big Ten championship over Ohio State or Michigan, and I think it's going to be Ohio State coming out of the East. What does that do to the playoffs? So a lot of things can happen in here, so we'll see what's going on. Okay, before we get to the Under the Arch segment, I would like to talk a little bit about insurance. Now, just like an offensive line protects a quarterback, insurance protects you. And we all know how important it is to stay protected, because life can be unpredictable. And that's why you need Allstate. The Wiley Group has two locations in Festus and Arnold to serve you. They offer home, auto, boat, motorcycle, business, life insurance, investments, and so much more. They offer a customized approach to make sure you and your family and your assets are properly protected. They also offer great rates and savings, so give Sean and his team a call today at 636-764-6294. They'll help you with an insurance quote right over the phone. Even give them a call if you just want to talk sports, because they do that too. And we all have busy lives. So you can also email Sean at SeanWiley@allstate.com and talk to him about your coverage options. And remember, you're in good hands with Allstate. Alrighty, now it's time for a pre-recorded interview I did with John Denton, St. Louis Cardinal beat writer for MLB.com. Okay, I am joined now via the Gateway City Sports Hotline by MLB.com St. Louis Cardinal beat writer John Denton. John, welcome to the show.
Don, thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you, and I'm happy we could make this happen. I want to start off by asking, this is just the question I had that came up
How do beat writers get assigned? Is this something that's rotational with where your organization you work for? Or do you request it, or?
This is my first year covering MLB. I covered the NBA for the past 24 years. There was a pandemic that hit. I don't know if anybody's heard of that, but there were some changes made there, and I was still covering NBA for certain outlets, and this job came along. I don't know how many people are familiar with my story. I grew up in West Tennessee. My grandfather, my father were Cardinal fans. 90% of my vacations as a kid were standing in front of the arch and going to the old Busch Stadium. So, I'm very, very familiar with Cardinal baseball. It was my connection with my dad. This job came open and I said, they're never going to hire an old NBA basketball writer. And, I applied for it and luckily enough, I was hired and it's a dream come true for me. And, I put the fan stuff aside and cover them like a real journalist, but I've had a heck of a first season and it's a dream come true.
Yeah, I know what you mean about family. I mean, I was introduced to the Cardinals by my dad many, 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 many moons ago. Uh-huh. And my grandpa was a big Cardinals fan and, so it was kind of I've been a uh-huh. fan. Well, God, I date back to 71.
Think that's one of the cool things about Cardinal baseball is, I mean, they have a tremendous following in St. Louis and, right. and Missouri, obviously, but this is something that's like multi-generational and it's something that Kentucky and Tennessee and Oklahoma and Illinois and, all these states, Iowa, Cardinal fans come from all over. I mean, when they go to Colorado, they take over that stadium. When they go to Cincinnati, when they go to Pittsburgh, the Cardinal fans take over stadiums. And like you said, this is a multi-generational thing where, I got it from my grandfather and my father got it from him and you're the same way. So that's one of the cool, unique things about Cardinal baseball, I feel.
Okay. So you covered the Cardinals this year, I guess you did first year, but you knew the team pretty well. So what was your take on how the season started to unfold? Because I know for me coming out of spring training, I started seeing a whole lot of similarities to 2021.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially with the pitching staff injuries and stuff like that. So what was your take?
Yeah. Losing Jack Flaherty, losing Reyes right out of spring training the first, second day, you knew you weren't going to be without them. I thought the team really kind of underachieved the first, half of the season. And then when they made the big trades, August 1st, August 2nd, they got Jordan Montgomery, Carlos Quintana, Chris Stratton. It really turned the season around. The team started playing a lot better. I mean, they were at one time, I think they were 4.5 back of Milwaukee in the division. There was about a 30 game stretch where the Cardinals went 22-8 and just zipped past the Brewers. And then they started looking like the team that could possibly win it all. Albert Pujols took off, had an incredible second half of the season. But the bad thing was Paul Goldschmidt, who was the best player on the planet through August 25th. August 25th at Wrigley Field was a day when he had 3 hits, 2 home runs, 5 RBI. And from that moment on, he really struggled and it carried into the playoffs. Didn't have a hit, a lot of swing and miss in the playoffs and it really hurt him. So, it was almost like 3 different seasons. They were a team that underachieved the first half. They played great the second half, and then, the playoffs, they just didn't hit. But I think everybody sees now how good that Philly team actually was.
Oh, yeah. I think the Phillies, they flew under the radar a lot. They didn't win a lot. They weren't real flashy. When they made the midseason or the offseason moves, and picked up Contreras and then Schwarber, which I thought Schwarber would have been a really good fit in St. Louis as a DH. When they did that, I'm like, okay, you're adding 2 power guys with Harper, with that pitching staff. Yeah. I did kind of expect more out of the Phillies, but I think we're seeing that. Like you said, I think we're seeing that now, definitely. Were you surprised by the midseason moves, given what they did last year, going to the reclaimed pile heap to get the pitchers they did? And this year they actually went out and got arms that – I guess you could say were more than viable.
Yeah, Quintana's a guy that they've liked for years. They saw him a lot when he was with the Cubs, saw him some when he was with the White Sox. He's one of those veterans who does not rattle. I mean, I think that's why you saw him pitch in game one. He got the start in game one. He's a veteran that pressure does not get to him. He's stubborn. He reminds me of Tom Glavin. I'm going to throw the ball low. I'm going to throw the ball in the corner 8 straight times, and you're going to snap before I snap, and he's going to make you hit his pitch. I mean, from August 1st until the end of the season, through the playoffs, the guy gave up 1 home run, and that's because he keeps the ball down. He does keep the ball out of the middle of the plate, and he basically says, you're going to hit my pitch or you're not going to hit anything. And then Jordan Montgomery, I mean, I still can't believe that a 6'6" left-hander was available at the trade deadline. I mean, us old baseball guys know left-handers are never available at the trade deadline, especially 6'6" guys with 3 pitches. So I think Montgomery is going to be a Cardinal for a long time. You know, he started off 5-0, went through a little rough patch, pitched well in the playoffs. He came on and for Michaelis and pitched really well out of the bullpen. He has the kind of demeanor that they really like. Like, he is an ultra competitive guy. He's got a little bit of nastiness to him. So I think he's going to be a Cardinal for a long time. I think he's going to have a great 2023. And I think they'll probably give him a long-term extension. And he's the type of guy that you want in St. Louis. Left-handed pitchers thrive in St. Louis because, you know, as we see in August and July, when the humidity is like chicken soup, you can't hit balls out of that ballpark. And, you know, right-handers struggle to hit balls out of the ballpark there. So they want to have lefties, and they definitely found 2 good ones that turned the season around.
Yeah. What is your, you mentioned Quintana. I got to go there now. Do you really think they're going to try and extend, they'll try and re-sign or, you know, get him before he goes free agent?
Pitching is the one area where the Cardinals actually have a surplus of, you know, with Flaherty back and, after trading for the 2 guys, you know, you got to find out, first and foremost, you got to find out, is Adam Wainwright coming back? Maybe if Adam Wainwright doesn't come back, you pursue Quintana even harder to be one of your first top-end guys. The way Jack Flaherty pitched late in the season, he looked like he could be a frontline guy. Michaelis, you know, was really good most of the season. He pitched really well in the playoffs. He can be a frontline guy. I think if they can get Quintana for the right price, they would love to have him back. You know, the way he pitched down the stretch, his price may go a little high. But pitching is one of those areas where – maybe you can take Dakota Hudson. Maybe you can even take Jack Flaherty, dangle them out there and see if you can get a good catcher, see if you can get a good shortstop for one of those guys. It's an area where they actually have some surplus, and there's, you know, very few teams in the league who could say they have a surplus of pitching.
Well, yeah, that's for sure. I mean, it seems like the Cardinals always have a couple of pitchers hanging around in the back, out by the woodshed or something, mm-hmm. ready to come in whenever they need them type of thing.
Yeah.
But I was very surprised with the trades we made for Quintana and Montgomery and what we gave up. I mean, the little that we gave up. I mean, I realized Harrison Bader was a starter, but he was injured at the time. And, you know, as we said with pitchers, I think the Cardinals also had this stable ready of outfielders that they just go and pick one up from Memphis and bring him up. But were you surprised that we got those guys for such a low price?
Yeah, it was, you know, Quintana obviously was a 1-year guy. He was going to be a free agent. So the Pirates knew they weren't going to be able to re-sign him. So they were just trying to get anything. So, you know, you gave up Oviedo. I think the Cardinals knew what they had in him. The fact that you could get a 6'6" lefty, like I said, is first off, is still amazing to me. And the fact that you could just get him for an injured center fielder. I'm so happy for Harrison Bader the way he hit in the playoffs as a guy who suffered with plantar fasciitis. I wouldn't wish that on anyone. It is a horrible, horrible injury. And, you know, it took him months to get over it. So I'm happy to see him, you know, bounce back in the playoffs the way he did. But like you said, it's still surprising, as coveted as pitching is, that you could get a guy like, a guy like Jordan Montgomery for that small of a price.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And I know what you're saying about the plantar fasciitis. My wife had it for once, and it was almost a year before, and she finally ended up having to have surgery on it to get it corrected. But so what he's been able to do, come back and play the way he did. I mean, really, in the playoffs, he was kind of the only bright spot for the Yankees. If you go mm-hmm. back and look at it, I mean, Judge went into the tank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They didn't hit that lineup. You know, a lot of times it's like with the Cardinals, they're going to win or lose based on whether their 3 and 4 hitters hit. Cardinals right. 3-4 hitters didn't hit. The Yankees 3-4 hitters didn't hit. You know, the Cardinals pitched well in the playoffs. They just didn't hit. And, you know, you can't score two runs and expect that to win a game. You know, it happened 11 years ago when Chris Carpenter was on the mound. They scored one run and he made it stand up. But, you know, when playoff time comes around, Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt have to hit or you're just not going to win. You know, we can analyze the X's and O's all we want from the playoffs. If those guys don't hit, you're not going to win.
Right. And that's true, too. I mean, that is so true. I mean, we've seen it over the course of the years, different, you know, not just with the Cards, like you said, with different teams. You come into the playoffs, and if you're 3-4 guys, your meat order guys are at least hitting average, you're in great shape. Yeah. If they have struggles, you're going to struggle. And I totally agree with that. What is your take on the bullpen and how that has come to, I mean, a couple years ago, it was Hicks and Reyes and Gallegos, and then it was Reyes and Gallegos. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. Are we going to continue shifting that bullpen, or are we finally getting settled now with Helsley, Gallegos' setup, and things of that nature?
I think Helsley could be the long-term answer. You know, it was a total fluke, and, you know, it's crazy the way it happened. I mean, the Cardinals organization have been around some fluke, crazy injuries. The other day was the anniversary of Vince Coleman getting run over by the tarp. You know, they've had guys cut their hands on hunting knives. You know, Helsley catches a line drive coming back at him in Pittsburgh on that Tuesday. He staggers. His middle finger gets jammed in the ground, and that ends up hurting him big time in the playoffs, you know. Sometimes sports writers, we love playing the what-if game, you know, because there's no true answer. But what if Ryan Helsley closes out the Phillies in game one? The Phillies may have rolled over in game two, and we had never heard a thing about them. They win that game, and now here they are in the NLCS, or in the World Series, I'm sorry. But, yeah, I think Helsley's the answer for the long term. I mean, his mix of he can throw a fastball 104 miles an hour, and then he even threw a 94-mile-an-hour slider this year, which I've never seen a slider 94 miles an hour. But, you know, he has that mix. Gallegos, they signed long-term. They still believe he can be a setup man. He wobbled some down the stretch. Getting Hicks back, potentially getting Reyes back next season, I think they have a shot of having a legitimately really strong bullpen. You know, if you put all three of those guys together, if they could get Cabrera's miles per hour back, he really lost his velocity late in the season. He's a guy who could potentially help him as well.
Yeah, you get to the Reyes thing. Are they still going to continue with trying to make Reyes? I mean, it just seems, and I don't know whether it was overuse in 21 or not, but it just seems like I don't think the guy can stay healthy.
Yeah, it's, you know, I feel bad for him. He's really struggled with every kind of injury imaginable. He's torn his labrum. You know, now he had to have that surgery again. He tried to do the shot. Meeting him in spring training, I was really impressed. For a guy who's gone through hell and back several times, and in fact, he's the nicest kid, strongest character, good eye contact. He's about all the right things. I think, you know, he's the kind of guy that the Cardinals will give another shot and another shot to. But, you know, also, his stuff is really good. I think he closed out his first 25 saves two seasons ago. He was an all-star. You know, he's got to build his arm up. Maybe he wasn't ready for the full 162. But, you know, with his stuff, you never give up on a guy with stuff that good. And I think he'll get another shot. And, you know, maybe he's a starter. Maybe he's a reliever. Maybe he's trade bait to try to get you a catcher. You know, a lot of people are going to take chances on Anthony Reyes because his stuff is just that good.
Right. You know, speaking of using his trade bait, that kind of leads me into the next. What do you see as the Cardinals needing to, I don't want to say rebuild this lineup because I don't think you need to rebuild. I think you just need to kind of reload a couple spots. But where do you see those spots?
Well, for the first time in almost two decades, they need to go get a catcher. So that's I would say that's a pretty big point. You know, for 18, 19 years, they've had a guy they could count on, didn't have to worry about. So
right.
That's first and foremost. You know, There's been a lot of chatter about Wilson Contreras. I can't say his name. The catcher's Cubs catcher for a long time. I'm not 100% sure that he fits the mold of the Cardinals. The Cardinals want defense first from that position. He's not a good defensive catcher. He's on the wrong side of 30. You know that he's played his best years. I know Contreras is interested in maybe being a Cardinal if the price is right. I would not be surprised if they don't go after like a Sean Murphy with the Athletics, a guy who's a finalist for the Gold Glove, a guy who's a left-handed hitter, a guy whose best years are still ahead of him. The Cardinal way is to find people on the rise and not on the decline. Find people who are team first, find people who take defense seriously. So as much chatter as there is about Contreras, I'm not sure that's the right answer for the Cardinals.
Yeah, I have heard Murphy's name mentioned. My thought was, as much as we've got some really good hitters, they're pretty much and power guys, they're all from the right side. We don't really have, I mean, Gorman could be that guy, a lot of left-handed power, or big power. I mean, Newt Barr's got some, but he's not what I would consider a power hitter. Could Murphy be that power hitter from the left side?
He could be that guy. You know, he's not a guy who's going to hit you 30 home runs, but he could be a guy who can drive the ball to gaps, maybe more than home runs. They're looking for guys who can do damage and drive the ball to gaps and things like that. Right. A bigger issue is they need to get Dylan Carlson figured out from the left side. You know, his splits were incredible. He was 320 hitter from the right side and like a 190 hitter from the left side. I've got to check those exact numbers, but you know, he's too talented to not be able to play every day as a left-handed hitter. Nolan Gorman chases too much up in the zone, hard stuff up, weak stuff away. He's got to get it figured out this summer. You know, if he's going to be an everyday player for this team, he's got to cut down on his swing and miss. If he's going to be an everyday player, he's got to be able to hit lefties. Those two, I guarantee you, will be in Jupiter by January working with Jose Oquendo. And I think they'll be different players. I mean, both of those guys are too talented not to be able to play every day. And they're both left-handed bats, so that could help out your left side as well.
Yeah. A lot of hay was made last year, and now this year, again, at the shortstop position. With last year, you had, seven, eight top shortstops available. And, I mean, this year you've got Turner and Correa, Swanson, Bogaerts. Do you see the Cardinals going after a shortstop and getting rid of DeJong, or are they just going to divest themselves of DeJong and give the job to Edmonds waiting on win?
You know, all the fans I know want the Cardinals to spend money in free agency and, go get that big $200 million player. They didn't do it last summer. I don't see them doing it again. You know, it's just not their style. They would rather trade for a Paul Goldschmidt, trade for a Nolan Arenado, but they're not going to be the team that gives the $250 million contract. When the rumors were going around that the Cardinals were going to trade for Juan Soto, I was saying to myself, they wouldn't give Albert Pujols $240 million when he was coming off the best 11-year stretch in baseball history. What makes you think they're going to give Juan Soto $500 million? You know, I know it's sexy and it makes headlines and it's great offseason gossip. I just don't see the Cardinals going that route. They're not going to put $300 million in one player. Maybe what the Phillies did, maybe that changes their thinking. The Phillies go out and get Bryce Harper a few years ago. They go out and get Schwarber this year. Maybe that changes their thinking. But if you look at their history, they would rather draft and develop. They know they have Tommy Edmund who can play there as a Gold Glove level. Paul DeJong did not hit, but Paul DeJong played excellent defense this year. He's got to figure it out. Like, he's either going to figure it out and he's going to be their shortstop, or he's not going to figure it out and he's probably going to be elsewhere. So, you know, Paul DeJong's got to figure it out this offseason. But, back to your point, I just don't see the Cardinals throwing $250, $300 million at a shortstop when they already have somebody who can play that position.
I've been kind of shocked with Paul DeJong. I mean, I know that when he first came up and he had that, came up, 2018 was that, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And played so well. And I'm like, okay, this kid, I like this kid. You know, I could see him as a big time home run hitter. He could get that 25, almost 30 plus a year playing at shortstop. 2019 came along. He got injured, still hit 25 home runs, still played at a good level. But since the pandemic, he's just, I mean, if you look at the track, it, like you said, yeah. Defense is still there.
Yeah.
But a lot of swing and miss, just like Gorman, a lot of off and on injury issues.
Mm-hmm.
How long did they wait?
I know. And it just doesn't seem to add up that a guy was that good. He's the steadiest guy in the locker room, Donna. Like he's mature. He's intelligent. He's thoughtful. He's insightful. Everybody on the team loves him. Everybody in the fan base knows what a great guy he is, but he's just got to figure it out. You know, he was, I think it was the second or third game of the season. He had an opposite field home run, and that's what they've been trying to get him to do, get away from being Deadpool, hit the ball to all fields. You know, he does that in that first series against Pittsburgh, and you're like, wow, the guy's getting it. And then he went off a cliff, and then they brought him back from Memphis. You know, they left him in Memphis for a long time. And brought him back, and he had a great, you know, 6-8 game stretch. His double down the line beat the Yankees. He had a couple of home runs. He had a home run robbed on his birthday, and then he fell off a cliff again. It just doesn't seem to add up for such a steady, smart, intelligent, likable guy who, you know, he gets baseball. He understands it, but, you know, he's just gone through these rough stretches. And like I said, he's either going to get it back and he's going to be the Cardinals shortstop. And if he doesn't get it back, I think he'll be elsewhere next season.
You know, talking about some of these guys and the positions, I have to kind of go back to the outfield. I mean, a lot of people were getting on Dylan Carlson because of the non Soto trade, and you know, and I was of the mind that okay. I think one reason Carlson became unavailable, not just because I think they believe in him, but I think they knew they were trading Harrison Bader. Mm-hmm. And they knew they were going to need somebody to play center field. And if they trade Carlson, they don't have a center fielder. Because Juan Soto is not going to play center field.
That's right.
And you know, Newt Barr, as good as he is, I don't think is ready to take on a full-time center field job.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was the biggest reason Carlson wasn't set up or sent out. But now I got to look at this outfield and say, okay, I've got Carlson, I've got Newt Barr. Where's my third outfielder?
Mm-hmm. Well, they hope it's going to be Tyler O'Neill. You know, Tyler O'Neill went through an awful, awful season. There's no way around it. Nobody hated it more than Tyler O'Neill. You know, he has the back injury, then he has the hamstring injury. Then he gets hit with a pitch while he's rehabbing on the wrist. It hurts his wrist. Then he has the hamstring injury again 2 weeks before the playoffs. So, you know, he lost his arbitration case. Tyler was really brokenhearted that the Cardinals didn't re-up with him. You know, he had a career year last year, 34 home runs, 80 RBI, finished eighth in MVP. He was really brokenhearted that the Cardinals didn't talk to him and try to lock him up long-term. And, you know, then the injuries hit and then the struggles hit and then the injuries hit again. So they're hoping he can be the guy again because, you know, when he's right, he's a gold glove, two-time gold glove left fielder. He can steal bases. He can run balls down in the gap. He can hit for power. They need him to be right. He's a big X factor going into next season, no doubt.
Okay. Well, I didn't mention O'Neill just because of the simple fact I think because of all the injuries, because he really had the one good year.
Mm-hmm.
You just been kind of seeming to wait for him to show up, and he shows the flashes. He has the great year last year, and then and that hamstring injury, I think that's what worries me more than anything else. I mean, twice in the same year did he come back too early from it? You know, the first one, we don't know the situation about that, but you know, I think that's why I'm kind of thinking, okay, a lot of people are saying Jordan Walker's the answer in left field.
Jordan Walker is coming. Jordan Walker, I'm going to tell you guys right now, Jordan Walker is 20 going on 35. He has the maturity of somebody who's already 10 years in the workforce. Like, He's smart. He has two parents at home who have given him tremendous guidance. Well-spoken, million-dollar smile. You know, the Cardinals don't want to rush him. Like, he's a can't-miss guy that you just don't want to mess up. Like, you know, if you do this the right way, he's going to be a guy who plays in the major leagues for 15 years. I don't think he's ever going to be a 40 home run guy. I don't know that he's going to be a 35 home run guy, but I think he's going to be a 25 home run, 110 RBI, 300 batting average guy. He had a little bit of swing and miss this year, but he hit 300 every month but one in Double A this year. This year was a big jump for him at 20 years old to see if he could handle Double A pitching. He almost became the first 2020 player in Springfield history. He had 19 home runs, 25 stolen bases. The kid can do anything. I saw him, a ball was hit over his head, a line drive was hit over his head from the warning track on the fly, threw it to Wynn at second base, got the runner trying to stretch a single into a double. And Wynn was even like, Wynn said, "What is this fool doing?" Like, he knew Jordan Walker was going to throw him out. Like, it was like a Bo Jackson type moment. I mean, the kid threw the ball in the air from the warning track to second base on the fly, perfect throw, got the guy out. Like, that's the kind of talent he is. But you don't want to rush him. You don't want to mess this right up. If you do this the right way, if you let him progress at the right pace, he's going to be a superstar. If you rush into the major leagues next year, you know, maybe you mess that up. But hey, if he comes to spring training, if Mason Wynn comes to spring training and they play their way on the roster, I think they'll take him seriously. It could be an Albert Pujols situation all the way back to 2001. Albert Pujols played his way on that roster as a 21-year-old in 2001. So, you know, we could see that again with Mason Wynn and Jordan Walker.
Okay. You mentioned Pujols, and I know we talked a little bit before the show. You mentioned Pujols about the story about him almost retiring, or you wrote about it. Can you kind of go over that a little bit with us?
Yeah, you know, we'll always remember, Cardinal fans will always remember this season. I mean, and they'll remember the 18 home runs after the break. They'll remember 699 and 700 coming on the same night. None of that almost happened. You know, all of that almost never happened. People forget. Albert Pujols had two home runs in April, two in May, and then none in June. The first month in his 22-year career, he didn't have a home run. And he told me he was seriously contemplating retiring. He thought he was embarrassing himself. He was frustrated that he couldn't figure it out. He was, you know, he was missing his family back in California. He seriously thought about walking away. He talked to Oliver Marmol several times about it. He wanted to quit, but he told me, thankfully, I had good people around me. I had people who were supporting me. I had people who were telling me, it's going to come. It's going to come. Trust the process. And sure enough, he sticks with it. They go to Atlanta on July 4th. He hits like four balls really hard that weekend. They play the Phillies the next weekend. He hits a big home run. And then he just takes off from there. You know, none of that great drama that we all saw in August, September, October from Albert Pujols would have happened if he didn't have a good support system around him. So I think it was like the story of the season, the way Albert Pujols came back to St. Louis and finished this Hall of Fame career on a high note. But just imagine if he didn't have Mo and Yachty and Oliver Marmol around him, supporting him, telling him to stick with it. You know, I think it's the story of the season.
Okay. Yeah, I said that's something when you wrote about it and you mentioned, I hadn't really heard that story. And you know, this kind of, like you said, I think we would have missed out on a lot had he done. I mean, I was there in the ballpark when he hit 698. Mm-hmm. And that was, you talk about magic in a night. I mean, it wasn't the big 700, but it was just, you know, 10 years of not seeing him in that Cardinal uniform and then seeing him in that Cardinal doing what he did 10 years before that. Yeah. I mean, that was just magic.
Don, this year, it reminded me that some guys are just wired differently. Like, they're not like you and I. Like, you know, greatness, you know, when you're great, when you have greatness inside of you, maybe it doesn't appear as often when you're 42. But greatness is still there, and that guy could still tap into it. You know, he knew going to Dodger Stadium that night, he had his six kids there. He had played for the Dodgers the year before, and he cranked it up. You know, it was national TV was there, and he hit those two home runs. Like, how many times they pinch hit him third inning against Colorado, against Arizona that day, or I'm sorry, it was Colorado. He hits a grand slam, the first pinch hit grand slam of his career. You know, how many times was he able to just to go into that well and pull out greatness? It was cool to see him kind of remind Cardinal fans, hey, I'm still that guy. I may not be that guy every night, but I can still be that guy from time to time. And I think it's the story of the season. Like, you know, people 20 years from now, they'll forget that Ryan Helsley blew the save in game one or that they got swept by the Phillies. But 20 years from now, people will still be talking about Albert Pujols hitting 18 home runs after the All-Star break, hitting 700 home runs. That'll still be the story 20 years from now.
Yeah. One other current player I want to get to, and then finish up by talking about some prospects. Nolan Arenado, does he opt out, or are they going to work with him without him opting out?
I think he's here to stay. I think he loves it here. He had his first child late in the season. He loves the family atmosphere here. You know, obviously he wants to get paid. Obviously he should get paid. I think and Jim Cott pointed this out. Jim Cott was in St. Louis during the celebration for the 82 championship team. He said, when fans talk about Mike Trout and Fernando Tatis and all these guys as greatest players in baseball, they need to talk about Nolan Arenado. Like, not only is he a 300 hitter, a 30 home run guy, he's possibly the best third baseman to ever play the position. I know guys who watched Brooks Robinson play, you know, may debate that. Guys who watched Scott Rowland play in St. Louis, but this guy's incredible. Like, he's a shortstop playing third, and he hits 30 home runs, and he hits 300, and he drives in 100 runs. He needs to be in that conversation. And I think him and his wife have fallen in love with St. Louis. I think he's going to be here for the long term.
Okay. All right. We talked a little bit about Jordan Walker, and you touched on Mason Wynn. And we saw some other prospects like Donovan, who's up for a gold glove at utility in his rookie season. I mean, I don't know how often that happens. But, you know, other guys that we saw like Palente, Burleson, you know, we only saw Herrera for like a quick cup of coffee and then he went back down. What are some of the ideas or thoughts of how these guys fit in?
Yeah, Don, you know, I think it was one of the cool aspects of this season is the Cardinals had 11 players make their major league debut. And, you know, that happens from time to time. But usually when you have 11 players make their major league debut, you're in last place. You're rebuilding. You're going through a fire sale. Like, the fact that they had 11 players come up from the minor leagues, it says a lot about what Randy Flores does drafting players. It says a lot about what they do in the minor leagues, the developing guys. And Ollie Marmol talked several times about they don't just come up and sit on the bench. Like, these guys are ready. They're not overwhelmed. The moment's not too big for them. You know, so to have a Brendan Donovan come up and play six positions and be a utility gold glove finalist, I mean, that's a big time. To have Palante come up and pitch in high leverage situations the way he did. You know, Gorman hit the ball great with power early on before he went through his slumps. You know, they've got some good young talent there. Gorman's going to be their second baseman for the future. Like you said, and I really think, Alec Burleson's going to hit. You know, he killed the ball. He was great at AAA. He was like the last one to bring up. He has a mindset that they really like. You know, they chose Gorman over Burleson for the playoff roster, but I think Burleson's going to be around a long time because he's a lefty bat. He doesn't overswing. He hits the balls to all fields. He's their type of player.
One guy I think we didn't mention in that group is Juan Yepes.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think he fits?
He's a heck of a story. Like, you know, a lot of people don't realize Juan Yepes was best friends with Ronald Acuna back in Nicaragua. Juan Yepes was considered the better prospect of the two. He was the one who got the bigger signing bonus at the time. He was traded. He came up with the Braves system just like Acuna did. They were signed together. They signed at his house, at Yepes' house. He was in the Braves system. The Braves needed a first baseman. The Cardinals sent Matt Adams to him. Juan Yepes, however, he spent 8 years in the minor leagues. So he's a guy who has an appreciation for making it to the major leagues. He hit that big home run in the playoffs. I think he had 11 home runs during the season. He's a guy who's going to hit. You know, he's going to hit for power. He's going to hit for gaps. He doesn't really have a position. Now that the National League has the DH, something all Cardinals fans thought they were going to hate, but you know, I think fans got over that quickly. But he could be a DH for you now. You know, Albert Pujols is not going to be in the equation. Right. Juan Yepes could potentially be your everyday DH, and he could be a guy who could play first base. He could play left field in a pinch. You know, him hitting that home run in the playoffs said a lot about, you know, what's inside of Juan Yepes, because that was a big moment and the kid came through.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we'll finish this up, but what do you see? I mean, I know we kind of touched on it earlier, but what do you see as, because the last couple of years we've seen out of the front office in the off season is they make one, I won't say big splash move because Matt's really wasn't a big splash, but they make a move where it's a name you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just kind of stop.
Yeah,
do you see that happening again this year, or do you see them making just smaller moves to supplement the kids?
Well, I don't think they're not a team that needs an overhaul. They're not a team that needs a superstar necessarily, but they do need some pop from the corner outfield. You know, I could see them sending a message to some of those guys in the outfield and go get an outfielder who could hit for power. I think, you know, catcher is first and foremost on their list. I think they're going to get involved with some catchers whose names are below the radar that we don't recognize. They're going to go get a good catcher. They're going to get a guy who can handle a pitching staff. That may be a guy who's already on a team. I think you take some of your pitching surplus. You even take some of those rookies I talked about and you put them out there and you go get a catcher. This team has to have a catcher. Andrew Kisner was, you know, played admirably, but I don't think he's an everyday catcher. He's a great player on that team, a great player in the clubhouse, but you got to have an everyday starting catcher. And, you know, maybe they flirt with a few shortstops. Maybe they try to go get some pop from the outfield, but catcher has to be your number one priority. And, you know, if all they do is go get a good catcher this offseason, I think it'll be a success. I mean, they're not one of the best teams in the league. I think we know that, but they're not that far away. If they could fill that pitcher hole, if they could find an outfielder that could give them some pop, I think they could join that upper crust.
If they don't sign Quintana, what do you think about them maybe dipping into the free agent pool for a Rondon, Verlander, somebody like that? Do you see them doing that maybe?
Yeah, you know, I know they like Rondon, but they're not going to like his price tag. You know, he's going to be a 25 million dollar a year pitcher. Like, you know, left-handers don't come cheap usually. I say that, but Jordan Montgomery came cheap, you know, but that was an exception and not the rule usually. But, you know, Rondon's probably going to be out of their price tag, and I don't think they need pitching. I think they're fine with the pitching. I think Adam Wainwright will come back. I think you're going to have Miles Michaelis. You're going to have Jack Flaherty motivated. You know, they have enough pitching. I think they got to use the surplus that they do have and go find a catcher. That's the position they need to fill.
Okay. Well, hey, John, it's been fantastic having you on. I really enjoyed it. Maybe we'll get together again when the winter meetings start up. I think that'd be talk a little bit more baseball then. Maybe prior to, because you'll probably be real busy during the winter meetings.
But yep,
maybe
no
prior
doubt.
Prior to the winter meetings, maybe, or maybe after the winter meetings, kind of analyze what happened. So we'll definitely be getting to talk to you again. So tell the folks where they can find you.
MLB.com. My stories are on Cardinals.com and MLB.com, and I'm on Twitter, John Denton 555. You know, we'll be pumping out stories every week, and then also a newsletter that fans could sign up for. Comes out once a week during the offseason, twice a week during the season. It was a big hit. We had a lot of success with that. Go to MLB.com, click on your favorite team, and you'll get my newsletter twice a week. And you know, we pack that thing full of information that a lot of Cardinals fans seem to like. So thanks for having me, Don. Appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And we'll see you soon.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right. I hope you enjoyed the interview with John Denton. That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank John Denton from MLB.com. I'm going to have him back on the show over the off season, and like I said, maybe after the winter meeting so we can kind of analyze that. And then periodically probably bring him back during the season next year. And if you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends.
And the show can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. Check out the show's website at talkingsports-otb-gcs.onpodium.com. Subscribe to get notifications when new episodes air. You can contact me via Twitter at TSOTBGCS. And don't forget to check out GatewaySportsSports.com. I'll be doing a series of articles here shortly about the Cardinals in the offseason, so be sure to check out that and the other articles as well. So thanks to John Denton, and we will see you again next time when we can talk sports on the bleachers.